mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Dotting the landscape from coast to coast with wonderful AM and FM affiliates, simulcasting on the internet and on global shortwave, and also on four powerful satellites. I'm Alex Jones, and we are joined by our guest, Dr. Jim Fetzer. The website, assassinationscience.com. We have a link to it on Infowars.com. I know we have John and David and Pat and Tom and many others. Hold in. We'll get to your calls early in this hour. I'll do a part two interview with Dr. Fetzer, who's a professor from beautiful Duluth, Minnesota. Back on with me in the noon hour, Central Friday. We're also riding shotgun with us for as long as he'd like to. Another host here on the network, syndicated talk show host in his own right, Erskine with Erskine Overnight. And I haven't even gotten to a lot of the news today. I have to throw these news items out and get responses from our guest and the listeners on that as well. The tyranny is just hitting us from every side, and it's dizzying at a certain point. Dr. Fetzer, good to have you on the show, sir.
It's my great pleasure.
We're going to talk about the Kennedy assassination and how it ties into 911. I've made this point. You've made this point. We'll talk about Northwoods. We'll talk about who really killed Kennedy, the ridiculousness of it, the fact that it was the government up one side and down the other, and we'll tie it all together, and we'll take the calls. Let's bring Erskine back up. Erskine interviewed you, and it took 2 hours just to cover some of the information Saturday night when, again, we're honored to have you here. Erskine, where's a good place to start with Dr. Fetzer on this whole Kennedy assassination?
Well, the thing is, it happened 40 years ago. This is old news. Who cares about it? Well, I'll tell you, you better care about it, because this was a coup d'etat of the United States government. They had an overthrow of the government, and the same people behind what happened then are now taking over today. The CIA was in large part behind that, and they put out so much disinformation. People running around saying, you know, we had Lee Harvey Oswald who did that all by himself, one lone gunman. Yeah, right. If you buy that, then let's talk about the Easter Bunny and some other things. Absolutely, totally ridiculous.
Dr. Fetzer,
I were buying it at the time. Talk about your government lies, cover up disinformation. This isn't where it started, but this is where a lot started. Now, anybody who is brave and courageous enough to overthrow the United States government by killing the president will not stop at a 911 or anything else.
And it's the very same.
Totally ruthless, totally power hungry, and now they've got it to where the American public is waving the flag and waving their rights, anxiously turning over their freedom to the same people that killed our president, that have killed the Constitution.
It's the exact same
totally
crowd.
Our country.
It's the exact same crowd, and that's it. The same military-industrial complex. The serial killers are getting grittier and grittier. Dr. Fetzer, what's really going on here? Who are we facing?
Well, I think the key here, Alex, is something Erskine alluded to, namely the capacity to cover it up. Because if you can falsify x-rays, substitute someone else's brain for the brain of the President of the United States, if you can reshoot the autopsy photographs, if you can alter the whole movies and photographs of the assassination, if you have the capacity to dupe the American people about the assassination of their own president in broad daylight in a major city in the United States, you have an awesome kind of power. And that's what was exercised in the case of 22 November 1963, and it's precisely because they were able to get away with such a blatant act of deception that I think that the powerful forces involved here have been emboldened to perpetrate other similar deeds and to cover them up.
And there's a few dates, you know, key dates, 1913 Federal Reserve Act, 1933 War Powers Act, 1947 National Security Act, and then, of course, we have what happened in 1963 with the Northwoods document. This is part of the Kennedy assassination. It's all coming up with Dr. Jim Fetzer. The website, you'll want to check it out. It is assassinationscience.com. We have a link to it on Infowars.com. Riding shotgun with me is Erskine. And your calls coming up with our guest. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You do not want to miss the next 55 minutes.
Big Brother, mainstream media, cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Couple of the headlines here. Associated Press, Jennifer L. Brown, bioterrorism test set for rural Oklahoma. They claimed they were going to cancel it. Now they're back with a vengeance. It says the test is risk-free and may one day save lives, the government says. We're not here to stir up unwanted fear and anxiety in the community. Federal officials sent letters to about 600 residents living in three testing areas around Oklahoma City, telling them not to worry. They see a crop duster emitting dust puffs over their heads. And in about 10 of the 20 articles I've seen in the AP and the Norman papers and the Daily Oklahoman, they said, we are going to be spraying you with the Bacillus thuringiensis, but which can be dangerous for you, but that's okay. But now they don't mention it in this article. And then another interesting article, New Scientist, stupidity should be curbed, says DNA discoverer. Yeah, and he also last month called for national DNA database. They want to go ahead and start engineering us before birth, licensing. See, this is the brave new world. It's all part of culture shock. They're trying to overwhelm us with every form of bizarre tyranny and then say that we're crazy because we don't want to go along with it. Just some key info to throw out there. Let's go to Dr. Jim Fetzer, expert on the Kennedy assassination and the facts that this government was overthrown with a total military coup d'etat because Kennedy had issued an executive order to get us out of the Federal Reserve. He issued Lincoln greenbacks with a red seal on them, debt-free money. He was getting us out of Vietnam. They said he was going to abolish the CIA in a given speech, just saying a dark force had taken over the government. And he also stood up to the Northwoods document, the U.S. government plan, with unanimous support up to his level, to blow up jet airliners, commit sniper attacks, bomb D.C., to blame it on foreign enemies. And we're riding shotgun is our good buddy Erskine, with Erskine Overnight, Saturday nights here on the GCN Radio Network. Great show, incredible guest. And we got a lot of callers holding. We'll get to you later. Stay there. Dr. Fetzer, just go over the basics here, the Bushies there involved in Texas, all of them. Give us just the rundown of the proof of the fraud of the story they put out with Arlen Specter and the rest of it.
Well, it's an enormous, sprawling, complex story, Alex. I think something everyone needs to understand is that George Herbert Walker Bush, who became president number 41, appears to have had a long history with the CIA well before he was appointed its director, which, of course, was done with great public fanfare, claiming that this was the first time that a civilian who hadn't had a history with the agency had received such an appointment.
Just out of nowhere.
But, of course, it appears to be poppycock. There are telling signs that Bush was intimately involved in the planning of the invasion of Cuba, the Bay of Pigs fiasco, where, in fact, it turns out the Soviets had learned a week before the assassination the precise date at which it would take place. The CIA had learned they knew and told everyone they wanted, but not the President of the United States, the guy who most importantly needed to know. Two of the ships were rechristened the Barbara and the Houston before the invasion. The plan had a code name, Operation Zapata, which happened to be the family oil drilling operation for the Bush family out of Houston. And I believe that if, in fact, the operation had been a success, they would have had oil drilling concessions all over the Caribbean. Basins. Documents were later revealed that showed that George Bush of the CIA had been briefed on the Bay of Pigs, and when the agency was confronted with this, they denied it, saying it was another George Bush. Well, there was another George Bush who worked for the agency, but he was a guy who sorted out files and would not have been receiving reports on operations being conducted by the agency. All this is disturbing enough, but the fact is that the military played a crucial role here. In fact, if you want the bottom line on the assassination, the research I've been engaged in with some of the best qualified people to ever study the case for the last 10 years indicates that the Secret Service set him up. The CIA, the Mafia, and the military took him out, and the FBI covered it up, where the whole thing was orchestrated and for the benefit of Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover, financed with financing from wealthy Texas oilmen. The motives were primarily three. One was to get in place the policies of Lyndon Johnson over those of JFK, including going to war in Vietnam. Another was to blame it on the Cubans. Oswald was being sheep-dipped, given a phony persona as a pro-Castroite, even a trip.
Just like McVeigh.
an imaginary trip to Mexico to the Cuban embassy was staged, and in fact they had photographs of the person who was pretending to be Oswald, which doesn't look remotely like him. They had tape recordings, which didn't sound at all like him. And J. Edgar Hoover, of all people, actually distributed a memo to his agents in charge of the different operations for the FBI that someone was impersonating him in Mexico City. Well, the very existence of such a document, that somebody else was impersonating Oswald, implies the existence of a conspiracy when he turns out to be the guy they're going to nail for the assassination. Oswald himself actually appears to be on the second floor. He was observed before noon, at noon, at 12:15, at 12:25, down and around the lunchroom. He was confronted there by a motorcycle patrolman within 90 seconds of the assassination. He was perfectly normal. He wasn't out of breath. When he later left the building, he actually boarded the bus to head back to his rooming house. When the bus became clogged down in traffic, he exited the bus and went for a taxi. A little old lady wanted the taxi, and Oswald graciously offered it to her. Must be the first time in history when an assassin has made his escape by public transportation.
Well, it goes on and on, but that's all just the little extra niblets here on the side. Let's get into the assassination itself and LBJ papers that morning already running the headline that he would be dumped by JFK.
That's absolutely right.
Go ahead.
That's absolutely right, Alex. Richard Nixon was in town. In fact, the night before, there had been a social event at the home of Clint Murchison, one of the really rich and powerful oil men in Texas at the time. An interesting cast of characters were there. H.L. Hunt was there, who described himself as the richest man in the world and may well have been. J. Edgar Hoover was there. He frequently came to Texas and would hobnob with these rich fat cats. In fact, these guys thought of themselves as the power center of the United States because their oil gave them so much leverage and influence over politics. George Brown and Brown and Root Heavy Construction, now a subsidiary of Halliburton, he was there. When the Vietnam War went down, Brown and Root got the contract to dredge a new bay at Comron Bay, even though Vietnam has many magnificent ports, and they surely could have found an alternative that didn't cost $1 billion. Richard Nixon was there. Madeline Duncan Brown, a mistress of Lyndon Johnson, by whom he had a son born in 1950.
And I've interviewed her. She Lennon came right out with all this to her.
Yeah, he did. He did. I'm getting right to that, too. You're exactly right, Alex. Lyndon showed up late that night, and these heavy hitters disappeared into a conference room. About 15 minutes later, when they broke up, he strode over to Madeline, and she thought he was going to whisper sweet nothings in her ear. Instead, he said in a hateful tone of voice that after tomorrow he wasn't going to have to put up with embarrassment from those Kennedy boys. On New Year's Eve, 6 weeks later, they had a rendezvous in the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas, and she confronted him with rumors rampant in Dallas at the time that he'd been involved since no one stood to gain more personally. He blew up at her and told her, Alex, that the oil boys and the CIA had decided that Jack had to be taken out. Lyndon's involvement has been corroborated by Billy Saul Estes, Wheeler dealer, involved in a lot of scandals that made a lot of money for Lyndon, John Connolly and their cronies, and he has given an interview with a French investigative reporter, William Raymond, that appeared in a French magazine whose title translates Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, saying that Lyndon was in deep trouble. He thought his political career was over. Jack, in fact, had already decided to drop him. There was going to be a vote on the Bobby Baker scandal. Bobby had been his chief administrative assistant during when he was majority leader in the Senate, and that vote was widely expected to tarnish Lyndon so badly that Jack couldn't possibly run with him again. But what Billy Saul added was that Lyndon had Cliff Carter, his chief administrative assistant, then come down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination.
Let's talk about the shooting itself. And Erskine, anytime you want to jump in, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think one of the key things is Dr. Fetzer alluded to, is the connection between the CIA, the mafia, and the government, how they all were in bed together.
Well, they've always been
in bed. This is a very important, significant part of the story that Dr. Fetzer has brought out.
That's absolutely right. I mean, it goes back to Eisenhower. In the waning days of the Eisenhower administration, when Castro had come to power, Eisenhower was apparently very upset about this. And he told the Joint Chiefs, in particular Lyman Lemnitzer, who was a chairman, that if they didn't have a legitimate reason for invading Cuba, they should make one up. Lemnitzer apparently took this to heart and solicited the assistance of of Edward Lansdale, who was a one-star Air Force general at the time. Lansdale would become famous for assassinations all around the world. He was a very clever guy. He had a big role in Vietnam with a fortified hamlet concept, which involved turning these agrarian communities in Vietnam into castle-like entities as though they had a moat around them. But Lansdale and others came up with schemes such as loading a commercial airliner full of college students, flying it over Cuba and shooting it down, or blowing up the Atlas rocket that was going to take John Glenn into space and blaming it on the Cubans. Jack was very dismayed by all these proposals.
That's Northwood's plan.
This is the Operation Northwood's, exactly right. He was very disturbed by all this and had them all turned down. In fact, the Joint Chiefs became increasingly dismayed and felt that Jack had betrayed them on several levels. For one, he had not supported a military invasion of Cuba, which they had unanimously supported.
By the way, let me stop you, Doctor. By the way, unless anybody thinks, oh, these are good guys doing what they have to fight communism, these very corporations the whole time were shipping weapons and oil and money to the communists. This was just their enemy they were going to use for their excuse for global domination. Go ahead.
This is just like Halliburton in Iraq. Alex, as you well know, Cheney did a lot of business with Iraq. Rumsfeld went to Iraq and, you know, was very supportive.
Well, he's also the bag man.
Biological weapons.
He's also the bag man with nuke material,
yep.
Pistol material to North Korea and Pakistan.
This is all very, very serious stuff. But going back to Cuba, the Chiefs were also upset because John had signed an above-ground test ban treaty with the Soviet Union, which they unanimously opposed. And now he was pulling our troops out of Vietnam, where they thought we had to stand and fight communism. So it wasn't difficult for the Chiefs to arrive at the conclusion, and they were already over the deep edge, as well portrayed by the motion picture Dr. Strangelove, where
I just want to add, Dr. Fetzer, of course, you were a Marine Corps captain in Vietnam as well.
I wasn't in Nam, but I was an artillery officer in the Corps at the time.
All right, I was going over your bio. Stay right there, and we will be right back with our guest, Dr. Jim Fetzer, and just keep riding along with us, Erson, because I know you got that clip, too, that ties into the Kennedy assassination. And yes, we'll get to your calls, so stay with us.
Thanks for listening to the M2K Talk Archives. And we are listener-supported with the Honor System. We ask that you wait. Don't donate a dollar at a time. PayPal charges a 35-cent surcharge on anything of a dollar or less. Wait till you listen to 5 or 10, and then donate, please. We appreciate your voluntary support.
Stay with us for the full hour. Erskine, who I really appreciate joining us, has this clip of when he interviewed someone involved. And understand, the CIA brags that they go into all these countries and use organized crime as a buffer. Plus, they understand the lay of the land and are ruthless. And describe this clip you've got for us, Erskine, and then play it for us, and we'll go back to Dr. Fetzer.
Okay, the clip that I'm going to play, and Dr. Fetzer's heard it before, is from Bill Bonanno, who was the archetype for Sonny Corleone in the Godfather show. Bill knew nothing about and had no connection to the Kennedy assassination. It seems like it was the Giancana group out of Chicago that was hired in large part by the CIA to do the assassination within the country. It's one of the reasons it was so good, but Dr. Fetzer has a lot of information about this up on his website. He has a lot of information at assassinationscience.com, and you can also get his book, Murder in Dealey Plaza. But this is from the Godfather, Bill Bonanno, from Erskine Overnight. And I think you'll hear on this exactly what happened on the Kennedy assassination from the Godfather. I hope I can get that clip up for you, Alex.
And again, folks, there's just mountains.
And the only thing I
go ahead.
Oh, here it is.
I can say is I've detailed in one of the chapters in the book of how I came into this information as to what was happening, what had happened in Dallas on that day. And I was in the Federal Correctional Institution at Terminal Island in San Pedro, California, and we were sitting around the yard with a bunch of fellows, some Cubans, and a fellow by the name of Johnny Roselli. And Johnny Roselli, this was in January, February of 1971. And Johnny had, was very upset with some of the people in his organization back in Chicago and was saying things that he shouldn't have been saying. Among them was, you know, those guys left me out to dry. I was in the manhole. It took me 20 minutes to walk the labyrinth underneath, the tunnels underneath to get to the Trinity River. It was my shot that got Jack, and they left me hanging out to dry. I'll never forgive them. So when some of us heard this, you know, this was the kind of information that was really a burden, and nobody wanted to have this information because it was long over. 63 was a number of years before that. But I've been asked many times, do you believe that to be true? And I said, of course I believe it to be true. And they asked me why I believe it to be true, because I knew who I was talking with. Here we're talking to a guy by the name of Johnny Roselli, who was involved in the St. Valentine's Day massacre. He was one of the shooters in that. Why wouldn't I believe a man who has that kind of a background? Plus, we knew each other from the streets.
Now, that's from Bill Bonanno when he was on Erskine Overnight. And the other thing that he said that I thought was so telling was, Jack Rubenstein, who he knew as, everyone knows as Jack Ruby, was as close to Sam Giancana as his pinky ring. Now, if you look at this, you look at the cover-up, you look at the FBI and how that J. Edgar Hoover said there never was a mafia, and the whole story behind all of this.
Yeah, how many times
it all
have we been...
combines in, doesn't it, Jim?
Yeah, indeed it does.
How many times have we been lied to? Erskine, I want to thank you for joining us. God bless you. You're on Saturday nights. Tell them the showtime.
It is on Saturday nights. It's 11 o'clock Mountain Time. Let's see. It goes on at...
11 o'clock Central.
11 o'clock Central.
All right.
Catch us. It's on Genesis Network. If we're not on your station, ask for us to be on. We'll be on there shortly. Thank you, Alex Jones.
God bless you.
Great, Erskine.
Doctor, that's a good place to bring in the movie star's father, because he was caught by the Dallas Morning Herald, a photograph. He's in prison for shooting a judge in the neck with a .243.
Yes.
Photographs were taken of him at the scene. He told people he was involved and later shut up. Tell us about Mr. Harrelson.
Yes. Well, just to give you my access route into this thing, I got to know the third of the three tramps, a fellow named Chauncey Holt, who had a long history with organized crime. Chauncey was a forger and a counterfeiter who was asked to prepare 15 sets of phony Secret Service credentials for use in and around Dealey Plaza. He brought them there. He was also instructed he was going to meet up with a couple of individuals, and he brought phony ID for them, too, which was tobacco, firearms, and alcohol ID and weapons. And those he met up with included Charles Harrelson, the father of Woody, the actor, and a fellow he knew as Richard Montoya, who appears to have been Carl Rogers, who is the subject of the book, The Man on the Grassy Knoll. Rogers appears to have murdered his parents and was disposing of the bodies by flushing them down the toilet in small pieces when the police caught up with him, but he was a step or two ahead of them, and they were unable to catch him. But Chauncey said that they were all instructed to head for a boxcar behind the grassy knoll after the event, which he had told was going to be a nonviolent incident to attract attention to our policy in Cuba.
Hey, well, stay there. We're going to... And folks, Harrelson is in prison for killing a federal judge at 400 yards.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Can tell what we have to have him back up Friday with us, and he'll be on for a couple hours on Friday because there's just so much evidence. But getting into Harrelson, I mean, I've got the photograph out of the Dallas Morning News. There were a bunch of photos of him taken with the three bombs. These clearly aren't bombs. They're serious mafia-looking wasp with, you know, in the trench coats, shifty-eyed, walking around from behind the grassy knoll, continuing with Mr. Harrelson, who's in... federal prison for an infamous crime killing a federal judge. Go ahead.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Well, Chauncey told me there were a lot of quite an assortment of characters in Dealey Plaza on this late morning afternoon, including a lot of mercenaries, assassins, and killers for hire. He said there were more bad guys there than you'd meet at a Soldiers of Fortune convention. was how he put it. And I think a lot of them were there as distractions, so that if somebody started looking at this case seriously, they'd have so many loose ends and leads to follow that it would be massively confusing. But in any case, yes, what happened was when they got down to the railway car, they were told it would look as though it was locked, but actually it would be open. It did look locked, but it was open. They climbed in and discovered there were lots of weapons and explosives in the car. Later, when they were being escorted through Dealey Plaza and Chauncey thought about it, it occurred to him that it might have been the case that if the original plan for the Patsy hadn't worked out, that they might have been taken and used as the fallback Patsies. The CIA always had multiple plans. So what's absolutely crucial here, I think, Alex, is the military involvement. Chauncey told me that he thought the whole execution in Dealey Plaza had the aspects of a military operation about it. The 112th Military Intelligence Unit, which ought to have been distributed throughout the city to control the crowd during the entire motorcade, had been ordered to step down. That required a high-level command. The officer in charge, in fact, protested vehemently, but was nevertheless overruled.
Let me stop you. Harrelson also said that, yeah, I did it, and then later shut up. Won't you make
You're absolutely right. Harrelson did at one point claim that he had killed Jack Kennedy, by which I take it he meant he fired the shot that entered Jack's right temple. This was a frangible or exploding bullet that set up shockwaves that blew much of his brains and skull out the back of his head, which had been weakened by another shot fired from the Dow Tex building that entered the back of his head. This is after the driver, by the way, Alex, had brought the limousine to a halt, which took place after bullets had begun to be fired. I mean, this was such an obvious indication of Secret Service complicity that the movies of the assassination had to be altered to take it out, so that instead of seeing him bring the limo to a halt, Roy Truly, Oswald's supervisor in the book depository, for example, observed that turning the corner from Houston onto Elm, the driver, William Greer, had swung out too widely and nearly hit a concrete abutment, and then he had to swing back into line, and that when he started down into Dealey Plaza, he pulled the limousine to the left and halted, and I think he pulled it to the left to get Jack's head a little more exposed to the multiple positions from which shooters were firing, which appear to have been at least six in number. Jack actually was hit at least four times, and John Connolly appears to have been hit as many as three. So there were a lot, and there were what appear to be three missed shots.
And by the way, Connolly always said that. He said, one bullet didn't hit me all these times.
Yeah, Connolly and his wife Nellie always insisted he wasn't hit by the same bullet. And, in fact, Jack had already been hit. Big John was turning back to his right but couldn't see what was going on. He turned to his left, and that's when he felt this doubling up. And by turning to his left, when he was hit on the right side of his back, that shot could well have been fired from the southwest corner of the book depository, not the northwest, northeast, where Oswald was alleged to have been located.
Unbelievable. Getting back to the military, LBJ was paying particular attention to the Secret Service transmissions that day.
That's absolutely right. Ralph Yarbrough was riding with him. In fact, there had been a big argument that morning over who should write with the President of the United States. Lyndon wanted Ralph Yarbrough, his liberal political opponent, to ride with Jack Kennedy, but Jack overruled him on the ground that the chief executive of the state ought to ride with the chief executive of the United States. And I believe that this change in plan simply occurred too late for the assassins to be notified, so that when they were shooting at Connolly, they actually intended to be shooting at Yarbrough, and it gives new meaning to Connolly's calling out, "My God, they're going to kill us all."
My God, they're going to kill us all. Unbelievable.
Also, as I was mentioning, was actually down on the second floor in the lunchroom waiting for a phone call, I think, that never came. The weapon he was alleged to have used couldn't even have fired the bullets that killed the president, because he was killed by the impact of high-velocity bullets. That's what his death certificate, the Warren Commission, concluded, and other studies have shown. And the Mannlicher Carcano, with a muzzle velocity of only 2,000 feet per second, was not a high-velocity weapon. So it couldn't have inflicted the rounds. Plus, it used copper-jacketed ammunition, not exploding bullets. So you have multiple shooters, multiple locations. One shooter appears to be in the south end of the Triple Underpass. There were there above-ground sewer openings where a man could stand upright with a little concealment at the top, a perfect shooting location. That appears to have been the location for a shot that actually passed through the windshield on its way to Jack's throat, where it then fragmented apart, going upward and rupturing this tough membrane over a compact part of the brain at the base called the cerebellum. The membrane is known as the tantorum. A bullet that, when it passed through the windshield, making it sound just like a firecracker. Alex, I've got a guy down the south who's going to old junkyards and firing bullets through windshields, and it turns out they sound just like a firecracker. And, of course, a lot of the witnesses said that the first shot sounded different than the others. It sounded like a firecracker. What they appear to have been hearing actually was...
Let's talk about the car, because I was watching Discovery Channel, and they actually admitted this, but just passed right over it. All the evidence, not just his brain and his body and x-rays, but the car itself, describe what happened to it.
Well, the car itself, the vehicle itself was taken back to Ford Motor Company in Michigan. Already Monday, it was stripped down to bare metal, and the windshield was replaced. We actually tracked down the guy who replaced the windshield and confirmed that it had a through-and-through bullet hole in it. Of course, this was a crime scene on wheels. There were all kinds of evidence was being destroyed there outright. Linden had the thing rebuilt and repainted black rather than the midnight blue that Jack Kennedy preferred, but he never rode in it. It was massive destruction of evidence.
They took it to Ford and broke the whole thing down, stripped it down to the bare bones and rebuilt it, and they kept using it.
Paid Ford $1 million for it. Yeah, it was in the president's, you know, fleet of limos, but Linden never actually rode in that one again. Interestingly, when right after the shooting had taken place, you know, and Greer drove to Parkland Hospital, we have photographs of Secret Service agents getting a bucket and sponge and starting to wash the blood and brains out of the limousine already, and the president hadn't even yet been pronounced dead.
It's incredible. It's just unbelievable, and it goes on and on and on. How were the people on the Warren Commission rewarded?
Well, it was an interesting lineup. You know, there were a couple of senior senators. There was no one on the commission, by the way, who had any political sympathies with Jack Kennedy. I mean, the only person who was not really rather conservative was the Chief Justice himself, Earl Warren, and Lyndon had strong-armed him into taking that position. I mean, if you think about it, it's ridiculous for him to have been serving in that capacity. If they'd actually done their job and there had been any indictments or a real investigation conducted, then the case no doubt would have made its way through the court system and eventually come
before
the Supreme
Court. Look at what the clerk, Specter, got, Senator for Life. Look at what Ford got.
Yeah, Ford became president of the United States, of course, and Ford was actually known as the FBI's man on the commission. He would notify J. Edgar Hoover what directions they were going so Hoover could make sure that he would slant the evidence the way he wanted to support the predetermined conclusion. Ford actually was responsible for changing the description of a location of a wound, which was about 5.5 inches below Jack's collar. This appears to have been fired from the top of the county records building at a downward angle, 45 to 60 degrees. A shallow shot only went in about as far as the second knuckle on your little finger. He had that description changed to the base of the back of the neck so that it would make the Arlen Specter's magic bullet theory, the idea that one of these bullets had traversed Jack's neck, come out his throat, and gone into John Connolly, more plausible. But the whole
and then the bullet wasn't even bent up. And anybody that's done a lot of shooting like I have, I mean, you fire bullets into water, there's more damage to it.
Well, it's ridiculous. Not only did they assume an impossibility, namely that a bullet could have passed through the neck without hitting any cervical vertebrae, which turns out to be an anatomical impossibility, but the wounds in Connolly were multiple. He had a shattered rib. He had a busted wrist. I mean, these are hard, bony impacts that would have deformed a bullet. This bullet, nevertheless, as you observe, which they claim to have done all this damage, was virtually pristine. It had some slight longitudinal deformity, just like other test bullets that were fired by the Warren Commission or the House Select Committee when it reinvestigated the case in 1970-78 into wads of cotton or buckets of water. It was as though it hadn't hit anything.
And it goes on and on. And before we go to these calls, I've been holding patiently. How does it all tie to 911? Because it certainly does.
Well, the fact is that Oswald, being given this phony persona as a pro-Castro communist sympathizer, was supposed to lead to the American people rising up and demanding a military invasion of Cuba, that we do it right this time. Lyndon knew enough to know that they had tactical nuclear weapons, and he steered them away, but he gave them the war in Vietnam. So it didn't play out the way the chiefs had planned. But strewn throughout American history, Alex, we find incidents where phony events have been used as a pretext to get Americans into war. The most recent being in 1991, when this young Kuwaiti girl appeared before Congress and later the United Nations to claim that she'd seen Iraqi soldiers coming into hospitals and taking infants out of incubators and leaving them there to die. It was very emotional and very touching, except it turns out to have been untrue. She was, in fact, the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States. She had never been to Iraq, and she'd been trained to do this by a public relations firm. Now, in relation to 911, even the House and Senate's own joint investigation led to the conclusion that the government had to have known what was coming. In fact, Arlen Specter announced that they didn't just have vague impressions, they didn't just have dots to connect, but they actually had blueprints of what was taking place. The amount of time the planes were in the air and the complete lack of response, I mean, it's not as though
Well, they had to tell us that. At first they said nothing, then the evidence came out, and they, Specter, oh, but it's a big accident, give us more funding.
What Specter, and it's ironic because Specter was a bad guy, you know, in covering up in the case of Jack's assassination, but here in the case of 911, he was actually trying to get the truth out. Specter's report was suffocated in the news that day by the announcement by the administration that it was supporting the new Department of Homeland Security. But when you think about it, Alex, no one knew yet what had gone wrong. There'd been no investigation by the government. How can you have a solution to a problem if you don't know what the problem is? And, of course, from the government's point of view, the most charitable interpretation you could give is that the CIA and the FBI had all these massive communications problems and muck-ups, but they weren't even included in the Homeland Security Department reorganization. Plus, a plane that flew into Pennsylvania appears to have been shot down by our own people. It was distributed over 6 to 8 square miles, but it should have been distributed over about a city block. Several witnesses have reported seeing a mysterious white plane with no markings that circled around after the plane crashed. Lots of the citizens out there reported hearing an explosion, but the FBI, when it was investigating, didn't want to hear about it and apparently didn't write it down.
Well, it's just like TWA, but the people behind this New World Order, you know, it's the Rothschilds, it's the Rockefellers, it's all those classic names, and they've got their little minion servant families like the Bushes, who are really Saxe-Coburgs, and that's what the British royal family really is German. And we just got hereditary mafia gangs running the entire country, and now they want it all. How do we stop them?
Well, I'll tell you, Alex, we got to get this group out of office. I mean, these are not Republicans, and these are not Democrats. I mean, you think about a traditional Republican agenda. It includes balanced budgets. It includes constitutional government. It includes non-interventionist foreign policy. These people are contradicting all of that. The key players seem to include Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Elliot Abrams, Richard Perle, even Bill Kristol, the conservative commentator, who all were participants in planning what is known as the new American century. If you go on my website and just scroll down to the Bush plan, that will take you directly to
that. That was written in 2000, and it says global domination. It says, quote, Saddam is a pretext.
That's absolutely right.
Written by them.
That's right. Written by them, and now they're in place. And, in fact, the Bush administration is using it as a map for what they should do. The amount of money in terms of a national defense increase is exactly the amount of money that Bush is budgeting for next year. And the idea of dominating the world by going to the Middle East and taking control is a key precept of this plan for the New World Order, which appears to have its roots in turn in a book published in 1997 by Zbigniew Brzezinski entitled The Grand Chessboard, where Zbigniew talks about
we need a Pearl Harbor event.
Pardon?
Well, he says we need a Pearl Harbor event to unify the people behind the war for global imperial conquest, is one of his quotes.
That's right, Alex. He says the American people, you know, support democracy and they're not going to support American imperialism unless they have some event like Pearl Harbor take place. And isn't it a remarkable coincidence that 911 should occur just at the time the Bush administration most needs it? The economy's in the toilet. The deficit is massive. The Bush political program is going nowhere.
They're raiding pension funds and corporations. Let's take a call. Thanks for holding, John, in Indiana. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir. Appreciate you holding, John. Go ahead.
Yes, Alex, and your guest. I'm sorry, this kind of is not...
It's okay. It's all connected. Go ahead.
Yes, hello?
It's all connected. Go ahead.
It is connected. A heads up to your listeners, if they, in different time zones, want to tape Oprah, or if they can't, I advise them today. She had a guest on there, a man named Michael Moore, who totally demonized the people who believe in the Second Amendment, our constitutional rights, and it was a movie that he's made called the...
Yeah, Bowling for Columbine, and,
yeah.
And he'll expose Bush on 911 and then say, give us your guns. Yeah, exactly what we need to do.
Yes,
give our guns to a government that's setting up a dictatorship.
Yes, but I would really, people should see it. I was talking at the TV, and there was no counterpoint there to ask the important questions.
Thanks for the call, sir.
Okay.
I'm aware of it. Let's talk to Pat. Well, actually, next is Tom. Tom in Wisconsin. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, Tom, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello. You're on the air, sir. Okay, doesn't look like that's going to work. Let's talk to Dominique in Texas. Dominique, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Listen, really quickly, I had you guys sent a truth out letter on Friday from a U.S. diplomat, John Brady Kiesling, who has just resigned.
Yes.
And there's a letter.
Over the plan to tap the telephones and hurry. Yeah.
No, I've got it here, Alex. He's making a great point. Here's part of his letter says, "We have not seen such systematic distortion of intelligence, such systematic manipulation of American opinion since the war in Vietnam. The September 11th tragedy left us stronger than before, rallying around us a vast international coalition to cooperate for the first time in a systematic way against the threat of terrorism. But rather than take credit for those successes and build on them, this administration has chosen to make terrorism a domestic political tool, enlisting a scattered and largely defeated Al-Qaeda as its bureaucratic ally." It goes
I thought
on.
You were talking about the communique that got intercepted where the CIA and folks are tapping and manipulating there at the UN trying to steer through this war resolution.
This guy is a political counselor for the American Embassy in Greece who has resigned and points out we should ask why we have failed to persuade more of the world that such a war with Iraq is necessary. We have over the past 2 years done too much to assert our world partners that narrow and mercenary U.S. interests overrode the cherished values of our partners. Even where our aims were not in question, our consistency is at issue. The model of Afghanistan is little comfort to allies wondering on what basis we plan to rebuild the Middle East and who's in whose image and interest.
All right, we got a break. We'll be right back. And I know callers are holding a while, and that causes problems sometimes. People to be by the phone when we go to them. Come back, try to take a few extra calls and hit some other key areas of information. Stay with us.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
We'll be back tonight, 9 to midnight, Central Standard Time, on your local AM or FM, or simulcasting via global shortwave at 5.085 and 6890 during the day at 12.172 and 9320. And coming up Friday, Dr. Jim Fetzer will be joining us for at least an hour and a half. We can really put the phone number out for folks who want to talk about the Kennedy assassination. Because if you're going to have a military coup, you know, they're not going to stop. That's the problem with tyranny. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And they're shoving us around, treating us like trash. The Patriot Act, too, by its very definition, is a dictatorship. And you've literally got an hereditary person now in control. The Sachs-Coburg cousin, the Bushes, you can't get any more blue blood than this literal British/German royalty family. I'm not kidding. You can't write, fiction this bizarre. They're worth hundreds of billions of dollars. No one even knows their real wealth. They're absolutely out of control, and they're just mid-level minions in this whole thing. A final overview. How do we stop this people? What do you think their grand plan is, even though we know it's stated? And do you see America resisting this, or just getting worse and worse and worse with the globalists using terrorism to get total control? Dr. Fetzer.
Oh, God, I'll tell you. We got to get these people out of office, Alex, and the sooner the better.
Well, they're paying for electronic touchscreens going in.
Yeah, it's frightening. It appears that Georgia, for example, the outcome of the election was controlled electronically through these voting machines, that Chuck Hagel had illegitimate victories in Nebraska because he's a part owner of these companies that own it. Diebold is one of them, and then, of course, all these ties with the military-industrial complex.
I mean, how do they get away with this?
That's a hell of a good question. I mean, you know, one thing that was done here in this last election was to not use exit polling. I've been reassured thinking about the forthcoming election that the exit polls would tell us whether the elections were legitimate or not. And when the Voter News Service shut down their exit polling, I had a shudder of apprehension.
Oh, they never,
that was going
you
to
don't
be
know
dirty.
About DNS? That was set up under another name by LBJ 1 month after Kennedy got it. Did you know that?
No,
it's always been a fraud.
I didn't, Alex, but I'll tell you, we cannot use electronic voting machines.
I
They're
agree.
Going to steal us. They're going to steal us of our democracy. Stalin observed that it doesn't matter who casts the votes; it matters who counts them.
Well, Professor, you know it's a constitutional republic, and Bush uses this word democracy over and over again until it's like a drug-like opiate. But I mean, it's certainly, even under their terms, not a democracy, what they're setting up. It's a command and control, Madison Avenue-driven fraud system. Anything else you'd like to add, sir?
We got to do everything we can to get these people out of office. The idea of building an empire is going to lead to a different world than we have as a constitutional democracy, Alex. Our quality of life is going to suffer. All of our resources are going to be devoted to maintaining the empire, and we're going to lose money for Social Security, unemployment insurance, for our schools, for our health care.
We're going to be enslaved. No one was as enslaved as somebody in Rome. I appreciate you joining us. Website, assassinationscience.com. And we will be getting you back on Friday, and I've been honored to have you here, sir.
My great pleasure, Alex.
God bless you.
See you then.
We're out of time.